Listener supported. WNYC Studios.
You're listening to All of It. I'm Allison Stewart. It's been an exciting few weeks for author and owner of the local indie store Books Are Magic, Emma Straub. Her most recent novel, the New York Times bestseller, All Adults Here, was released this week in paperback. And now she's launched a virtual book tour to celebrate, and she continues to do some good along the way. Her Brooklyn bookstore, Books Are Magic, helps match donations for social justice causes, most recently raising money to support the AAPI community. And if her Twitter feed is any indication, she's finished a draft of a new novel. So we thought this would be a good time to revisit our Get Lit with All of It book club event with Emma Straub from last August. All Adults Here deals with themes of gender identity and sexuality. So later in the hour, you'll hear my conversation with gender and sexuality scholar Dr. Lee Ayrton about what they call the new gender culture. You'll also hear an interview and two special performances from Rufus Wainwright, who was our musical guest. Rufus has been as busy as Emma recording virtual concerts at City Winery, participating in a fundraiser for the LA music venue, the Hotel Cafe, called the 20 Years in 20 Days benefit, and he's scheduled tour dates in Europe for the summer. So Rufus in a bit, but now Emma. Here are highlights from my interview with Emma Straub about her novel, All Adults Here. The story follows the Strix, a family full of secrets. That is, until the tragic death of a member of their small town forces some of those secrets to the surface. There's Astrid, the matriarch of the family, who is struggling to figure out how to tell her kids that she's in love with a woman, a hairdresser named Bertie. Astrid's eldest son, Elliot, has a huge decision to make about a property he's purchased. Astrid's daughter, Porter, has decided to have a baby on her own and also resume an affair with a high school flame. And then there's Astrid's granddaughter, Cecilia, sent to live with her grandmother after an incident at her school in Brooklyn. How these characters all come together and how their secrets get revealed is the joy of All Adults Here. I began our conversation by asking Emma, what is her first step when writing a novel?
Step one is people. You know, I think that some writers have, you know, like really elaborate plots where, you know, every beat needs to be worked out and every twist and turn, and I think some writers really sink in to the place. But yeah, for me, I start with a person or a couple of people. Usually I start with one person, and that person leads to another and leads to another. And then before too long, I have like a, you know, a whole cast. And then I just sort of move them around and see what happens.
So who was your first person? Who appeared to you first in All Adults Here?
So this is going to sound really ridiculous, but because it's just us chickens, Zoom in here, I'm going to tell you anyway. So I had this fantasy several years ago that I was going to write a romance novel about cheese. I mean, because why not, right? What Sure. do I love more than cheese? Nothing. So I thought that I would write this, a very romantic book about cheese. And so I started with the character of Porter, who's a cheesemaker. But then I don't know, something happened where I really found that I was actually more interested in Porter's mother. And and then it just, I don't know, it just sort of built and built and built from there. I think if you had asked me when I started writing the book, which I think was in 2016, what is this book about? I would have said, It's a romance about cheese, Allison Stewart. But if you ask me now, you know, my answer would be very different.
So I'm going to ask you now, what is this book about, Emma Straub?
I would say that the book is about, it's a book about forgiveness, and it's a book about growing up, and it's a book about, you know, living in the place where you're from and how that offers both, you know, sort of a comfort and support, but also, I don't know, is like a lid on your pot. You know, it keeps you contained in a certain way because people are so used to seeing you a certain way, and it can make it hard to change and evolve. And I think all, you know, all the characters in the book are changing and evolving, but, you know, not always gracefully and not always, not as elegantly as they might like. And it's about making mistakes, and it's about messing up as a parent. And I certainly didn't know that. I mean, that doesn't, you know, that sounds much harder than a romance about cheese. So I, you know, if I had started there, I think I would have felt daunted, but because I sort of fell into it, it happened naturally.
One of the things I really enjoyed about the book was that you were writing about generations. What was it that you wanted to explore about the way generations interact?
Well, so I have a lot. I have a lot of thoughts. I mean, the first one is that, you know, I am like Porter in the book. I live in the place where I grew up. My parents live a 5-minute walk from my front door, and my kids go to the school that I went to. I see people from different parts of my life all the time. I probably interact more with my parents' friends than most people do when they're 40. I don't know. Like I see them around a lot. I think about that, you know, where like, you know, if one of my parents' friends comes into my bookstore to see me, like, yes, you know, that person is seeing me as, you know, 40-year-old Emma, mother of two, etc. But they're also seeing me as like, you know, my 16-year-old self and my 9-year-old self and my 3-year-old self, which is a lot all at once. But the other thing that I think about generationally a lot, and that I thought about a lot while writing this book, is that I have at Books Are Magic, our bookstore, you know, my husband and I have employees who are mostly, I would say, a generation younger than I am. You know, they're mostly in their 20s. And boy, oh boy, have I learned a lot from them. They are, without exception, smarter than I am and just sort of further along in understanding so many things. And it's just wonderful. It just makes me feel like spending time with people who are a lot younger than I am just makes me feel like it is possible that this country is going to be okay, and that humanity is moving in the right direction.
In the book, there's a lot of the book about queerness and identity. How did you want Astrid's and Robin's journey to talk to each other?
I think that the difference between Astrid and Robin is that Astrid, you know, is nearing 70, and I don't think that these are new feelings for her, you know, but she'd been scared, you know, and she's a very like hard and fast sort of orderly person. But I think that for her, you know, keeping sort of the trains running on time and, you know, raising her kids and doing everything else took precedence. And so, you know, she wouldn't have paid attention to a love life of any kind for a long time. But yeah, I think that she just sort of wasn't ready. And then Robin's more ready. I mean, she's nervous about it too, but she's more ready, and her parents are ready too. And I think that that goes a long way, you know? I mean, I think that, you know, for the kids who I know who are trans, their parents are just amazing and just can make it. I think parents can just make things so much easier or so much harder. And I know that in general, the experience is so much harder. But yeah, I wanted, you know, the times, and you called this book Literary Sunshine, you know, so it is a rosy view, you know, for sure. But
you know, that's okay sometimes.
But it's a real one. Yeah,
that's okay.
I think it is.
I think it's important. Actually, I think it's important sometimes.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah, me too.
You know, we did a poll about Porter's affair with her former friend, Jeremy. We asked on Instagram during one of our book club discussions whether this is when people were just starting the book, whether they, you know, they supported Porter's affair. 60% said no. but that means 40% said they did, which is not insignificant. But as they were reading the book, it more listeners voiced their dismay at Porter sleeping with Jeremy. One person wrote to us, Porter sleeping with Jeremy after Rachel was so disappointed with her. Why? Why, Emma? And why does she keep coming back to Jeremy?
I mean, he's a hunky veterinarian, right? So, I mean, those are two pluses, mm-hmm. right? I mean, yeah, no, obviously I'm joking. It was a terrible idea. She should not have been doing it, obviously. But I don't know. If people always make the right decisions for themselves, what fun are they? You know, like if people are always conscientious and thoughtful, what fun are they to read about? You know, not very. So yeah, and Porter knows it too. You know, I think that like the thing about Porter in this book is that she's really like this is the first deliberate thing that she's ever done, having this baby on her own. And so she knows she is rounding this corner into responsibility. And I think that going back to sleeping with Jeremy is sort of her last gasp of totally selfish, idiotic behavior.
Okay, viewers, you can start to send in your questions for Emma. We've got this one is really interesting. It's from Catherine. How would the Strick family cope with COVID?
Oh, man. You know, I think about it all the time. I think that Astrid would be great. You know, I think Astrid, I mean, they're all wearing their masks. Mm-hmm. They're all being good. They're all washing their hands. Astrid would be probably like making her own hand sanitizer solution. I mean, I think that the trickiest part would be them all stuck together in the house. I mean, I don't know. Would Porter want to be alone? Probably not, right? So I think that she and the baby would probably move back in. I mean, I guess the one you would really worry about would be Elliot, because like me, Elliot has two very loud children. And so you would worry about the decibel level in Elliot's house.
Let's talk about Elliot. We asked people what they hoped he would do with the property. One person said, bigger, better, sheer beauty. Another said, let the town vote on it, use the results to make the decision. And another said, not compete with Birdie in any way.
Yeah.
In your imagination, what happens to that property?
Oh, you know, I mean, I'm a softy. I'm sort of with whoever people said, like, do what Birdie tells you. Like, I think that that would be a great thing. I guess in my fantasy, it becomes like some sort of a community center, hub. There's already a bookstore. I would say bookstore normally, but there's already a bookstore in the town right across the street, and you do not want to mess with that. I would say letting the town vote, like, you know, have a few options. Let the people speak.
When you thought of this town of Clapham? I sort of, you know, my brain went immediately to Chatham in Columbia County, and because I do know I knew somebody once who ran a cheese farm up there. What were some of the other names that you kicked around for this town?
I had a few. You know, naming things is hard. I mean, you know, naming towns, naming humans, naming fictional humans, naming bookstores, it's all hard, right? But I love names that you can do different things with. And so, like, Porter's goat cheese is called Clap Happy, which you stick it in there and you see if it seems weird. Because I did want it, like, you know, so it's in the Hudson Valley, and so, you know, Chatham, I was thinking about Chatham, but I wanted it to be its own little made up place. I'm in Montauk, New York right now, and even though Montauk is not in the Hudson Valley, I was thinking about Montauk a lot when I was writing this book in terms of the geography, because there's the gazebo in the middle and the sort of roundabout at the center of town. And there's Spiro's diner in the book that's very much like this pancake house here in Montauk. And so driving around in the last couple of days, I've had this funny feeling like, oh, here I'm actually here. I'm actually here inside this place where I've spent so much time in my head. And I'm getting confused. I'm like, wait, that road shouldn't go there, because in my head it goes to Astrid's house.
Meredith Goldsmith writes, a favorite line of mine is, no one wanted an independent mother, which seems to apply to Cecilia and Juliet, Astrid and her kids, and maybe even Wendy. What about this issue in this book? She wants to know a bit more about that idea of no one wanted an independent mother.
I don't remember that line, but I believe you that it's there, because it's something that I feel deep inside my skull, especially right now. You know, I think that so many of us who are working mothers of small children, especially, have had our lives totally flipped in this really unsettling way during the pandemic, where all of a sudden, you know, all of my independence has evaporated, and so has my working life. You know, I think that, you know, there are some people who are, you know, say, recording their live radio shows every day from home. But then there are some of us who, you know, write novels instead. And so it's not, I don't know, I've been thinking about that a lot, where, you know, I think that, of course, I believe very much that my children want me to be a successful human, and whatever that means. And I know that I certainly want them to see me working and happy and independent. But I think it is this, you know, there's this push and pull of parenthood where, you know, you want to be, you know, your own person and able to do everything that you want to do. But then you also have to be ready to drop whatever that is, you know, at a moment's notice.
Anne wants to know, would you ever consider a sequel to the story?
You know, I've been trying to write the TV version. I've been pitching it with a fabulous woman named Sarah Hayward. So we'll see. I mean, there might be a TV show. And what's been actually really fun about that is thinking of things that would be in a sequel, you know, like what happens to Porter, like who is Porter's next romance? I'm not going to tell you, but it's great. It's so fun. And you know, I mean, I think as a novelist, I don't know if other people feel this way, but I do often feel like, oh, I miss her. I miss them. You know, what would they be doing right now? How would they be handling this? And so it's really fun to sort of allow your mind to go that way.
Before I let you go, I just want to talk a little bit about your bookstore, Books Are Magic. And I wanted to applaud you for your matching donations to a series of really great social justice initiatives. And that's really, it's a great thing anyway. And then it's also a great thing to do in a time when small independent businesses are having such a hard time financially. How is it going for you? What would you want people to know about running a small bookstore during this time? Anything you think people should know or think about?
Oh, it's a piece of cake. No, I'm just kidding. It's not a piece of cake at all. It's been just an enormous amount of work, but like all of us, it's been an enormous amount of work shifted on its axis. You know, we were always working hard, but I think, you know, like my events team have had to figure out, you know, how to do this, how to have Zooms and that kind of thing. And, you know, my husband who runs, you know, like the day-to-day of the bookstore, like had to figure out how to make it into a distribution center and to ship out 50,000 books over the course of the quarantine. But, you know, we have been really, really lucky.
Those were highlights of my conversation with author Emma Straub at our August Get Lit with Olivet Book Club event. We spent the month reading her novel, All Adults Here. Now, coming up, All Adults Here deals with queer and trans identity. So I spoke with gender diversity expert Dr. Lee Ertrin about what they call the new gender culture. Stay tuned.